So if we haven't met yet, I am Tim. I'm the pastor here at Restoration. I know we have some new folks joining us this morning. And we have been in this sermon series. Today is the last week of this sermon series. We've been talking about the game of life. And we've been looking at board games and seeing how board games, what the lessons that they teach us, how that affects our lives and how we live them. And I realize that often when I am preaching, I am the very last person to ever actually get something that's going on, okay? I realize that I can prepare and I can pray and I can have listen to God, but I still realize that God is working on me as I'm working on a sermon series. So I didn't realize it until this last week that this has been one of the most introspective sermon series I've ever done for myself, where I've had to look at me and say, Tim, do you practice what you're preaching? Right? All of this has been about how we live life, and we say a lot of things, but am I living my life matching up to these things that we've talked about? And I've had to do a lot of work on me during this time. I hope that you're doing work on you too. I hope that you're hearing it and that you're saying, wow, this is something in my life I need to work on. If you've missed some of these sermons, you can always go back online and listen to them. They're all there. But I hope this is going to be a time like that for you as well. This morning, we're looking at the board game Scrabble. And Scrabble's all about words. And I think our words are often something more than anything else that can get us in trouble. Would you agree? How we use our words, what we say with the letters that we've been given and how we form them, can really help relationships or hurt relationships. Winning at the game of Scrabble is all about using the biggest letters and the right letters to make the best words, right? If I can do that and I can get them on triple word score, all is well with the world. If I can get a Q on a triple letter score, all is really good. So it's about using those words strategically. The Bible talks a lot about the tongue, right? The tongue is the symbol for the words that come out of our mouth. And the book of James says this about the tongue. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they're steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. Wow. I don't know that I'd want to sit down with James in a word off, right? I mean, James is saying, your words can get you in a whole lot of trouble. Be careful. Because the body, James says, or the mouth, can control the entire body. So the question I want to begin with this morning, perhaps a little bit of a provocative question, is who's running your mouth? Who's running the words that come out? Who's controlling your mouth? I watched this video this past week, Nina Conti. She's a ventriloquist, right? And I have never seen a ventriloquist quite like her. It's not the normal puppet type on the side, but she uses her ability to completely run other people's mouths. So I want you to check out this video and see what she does to this man's entire body by just running his mouth.
Glasses off, thank you. And, can you see?
Yeah.
Now, this is just a simple mask. It's going to take the heat off you. You comfortable? Oh, yes, I'm loving it. Classic, okay. Oh, I wasn't expecting this. So, Luke. Yes, yes. Are you happy to be here? You're okay? Yes, I'm delighted with the way things are going so far. Okay, good. Yes, in fact, I'm really glad you got me up here.
Why is that, Luke?
Because I'd like to show you all my dance moves. Yes. Really, all my life I've been waiting for an opportunity like this. I think the world is ready to see my dancing. Are you sure? Are you sure you want to dance? Yes, I'm absolutely sure. Because you can sit down anytime you want. I'm not sitting down. Not till I've done my dancing, okay? Because your body legs would suggest that you might not want to dance. No, I really can't wait. I'll just put my hands in like pockets to conserve energy. For when the moves start to come thrusting out of me.
Are you sure? Because you have free speech, you exercise your right to free speech.
No, absolutely no need for that. I'm very happy to dance.
Okay, well, whenever you're... I'm so sorry.
Don't be sorry, I'm loving it. You know, I think some music might help.
Okay. Well, we can give you music.
Hit the music.
Is that good?
Yes, that's excellent.
It's not too weird.
No. Klezmer is my favourite genre.
Fine.
Yes, I'm going to show you all my left hand waving.
Your left hand, yes, that would do.
That's a start. There you go.
That's good, they like it.
You want to see the other hand?
Yeah, they want to see the other hand.
Yeah, well, here's my other hand.
That's lovely.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So that's your dancing.
Yes, it's minimalist.
This girl!
It's coming. Oh, yeah. I feel liberated. Oh, the inner joy came out of me in the end.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so do you see what happened there? I mean, this guy clearly is not excited about dancing up in front of these people. Now, you could tell that initially, right? Because his body language is like this. But words are so powerful. Did you see what happened as it went on? The words that were coming out of his artificial mouth, he started moving. They controlled the rest of his body and everything that went on. It would have been probably as funny if he just stood up there like this the whole time when she would say things like, and my left hand is moving and my right hand is moving. But words controlled him. Now, I don't think that's all that different from our own lives, right? Depending on what mood we're in, the words that come out of our mouths change our entire situations. They change our body language. They change the way we interact with others, and they change our relationship with other people, including our relationship with God. The way that we use our words are important, and that's what I want to get to this morning. Now, we've been looking at the Proverbs in this series, and we're going to look at Proverbs for the last time today with this series, and we're going to look at Proverbs chapter 11. This suggests that the tongue is such a dangerous thing that we have to be careful when we use it. I like to think of the mouth now, after I've been doing all this work, as like opening up a chainsaw or a blowtorch from a package, and you get the instructions like, leave the safety on. How many times in our relationships with people or in our conversations with people do we forget to leave the safety on with our mouth? Right? We just take it off and let it flow, whatever comes out. Well, let's look at this passage from Proverbs chapter 11 this morning. When we put, I think it's the next one. Yeah, that's the James passage. With their mouths, the godless destroy their neighbors, but through knowledge, the righteous escape. When the righteous prosper, the city rejoices. When the wicked perish, there are shouts of joy. Through the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted, but by the mouth of the wicked, it is destroyed. Whoever derides their neighbor has no sense, but the one who has understanding holds their tongue. A gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy person keeps a secret. So we're going to look at this passage this morning, and I came to a realization this week about the Proverbs that I think is going to sort of flavor our the direction we go in this morning. A lot of these Proverbs that we've been using have held to a pattern. The first half before the comma is something like this. Something you do is bad, comma, but you can do something good with it. Okay, so that's the flavor we're going to use for our topics that we're going to walk through this tongue conversation with this morning. So today, we're going to look at this passage and what we can learn through this lens. We could do it badly, comma, but we could also use it well. So the first thing is, let's look at verse 9. Words can tear us down, but words can build us up. Let's look at verse 9 and what it says. With their mouths, the godless destroy their neighbors, but through knowledge, the righteous escape. Now let's talk about this for a second. With their mouths, the godless destroy their neighbors. I did some research this week and I read people who study these words for a living, and that's what they do. And the word godless here does not refer to people who are atheist or agnostic. Rather, when the author is writing this, the word godless refers to people who aren't focusing at all on God. Do you have moments in your life, no matter where you are on your journey, that you are godless? Yes, maybe. I certainly do. I have moments when I am not focused on God, and it's those times especially when my mouth is really dangerous, when things come out to hurt people in my life, like my family or my friends or my coworkers, because I'm not focused there. But the second part is on the word knowledge. And what these writers say, these people who study this, they say the word knowledge here refers to many things. Knowledge of God, for sure. But knowledge of other people. Would you agree that when you don't know someone else, maybe the words you use are a little bit different? Knowledge of ourselves. Whew. That's a hard one there, right? Knowing yourself. The more I know myself, the more I am careful with what comes out of my mouth. And then knowledge of a situation and how to deal with that. So all of those words go together. Now, we can use our words to build people up in a situation, or we can use our words to tear them down. I had something happen to me last summer. It was a pretty awful experience. I was going to Corpus Christi, Texas, and I recommend that no one ever take a flight to Corpus Christi, okay? Here's how the flight went. I got on the plane here at Dulles, and I had to go to Houston because you can't really get a direct flight to Corpus. It's a small airport. And I got on the plane, and we were just a little bit late, so it wasn't that big of a deal, but I sat on the plane, and because of several different problems, I was on that plane for 3 hours before we ever took off. I sat on a plane, and Susan told me last night when we were walking through this sermon, I wasn't allowed to tell you what all those problems were, because she said I wasn't very kind when I was telling those. So we had many problems, and I get into Houston, and my four-hour layover is now gone. There's no way that I can make it to Corpus Christi that night. And I'm also told very quickly that there are no flights out tomorrow to Corpus Christi. I was exhausted. I was standing with the ticket counter people. There were many of those people when we got off the plane, standing there to help people. And I was so tired, but I caught some other family, a couple, down the counter. And I had really stopped paying attention to the guy who was helping me because I was very intrigued with what was going on down here. Voices started to be raised. These people were angry that their flight was being canceled. And I could tell that without ever listening to the words that were coming out of their mouth. It was getting louder and louder and louder. And I was watching the face of the young woman who was helping them. There was a gentleman who was helping me. But I was watching the face of the young woman who was helping them. And she was getting more and more discouraged. As they would get louder and louder. And the only phrase that I kept hearing come out of her mouth was, "I'm so sorry, there's nothing I can do." As if it was her fault that their flight had been delayed and they had missed their connector. But over and over again. And finally, over time, they were working on my situation because they had no clue how they were going to get me to Corpus. But over time, this family walked away from the counter. And I saw the woman step back from the counter and she turned around and she had a tear coming out of her eye. See, there was nothing that this woman could have done to make that couple happy. They were so upset with her. And I was not in any great shape and I was in no place of where I was focusing on God at this moment in my life, friends, but I was exhausted. And the man finally figures out, rerouting me, I had to get up and go through some other airport the next morning to get back to Corpus and rent another car from another place. But they helped me figure it all out. And the guy looks at me at the end and he said, "Thank you." And I said, "For what?" And he said, "For not yelling at me. Thank you for not screaming at me." And I couldn't even muster anything good to say because I wasn't having these great thoughts either. I was just tired. But I realized in that moment that our words can be used to build someone up or to tear them down. Right? I could have gotten angry and upset. It wasn't going to get me to Corpus that night. There was no way. There was no flight. He couldn't magically bring some airplane that I could hop on and fly. It wasn't going to happen. But the words that were used by the other couple ruined that person's day. It ruined her night. She was there. She was ready to take on the problems of the world. So friends, our words can be used in a very instant to build someone up or tear them down. It doesn't help for us to use words to tear someone down if it's not going to, even if it is, but if it's not going to change the situation, it doesn't help at all. So that's the first thing. Our words can be used to build someone up or tear someone down. Here's the second point. Your words can be a curse, but your words can also be a blessing. And this I want you to think more long-term in someone's life. Let's look at verse 11. Through the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted, but by the mouth of the wicked, it is destroyed. So think of this less of how I'm going to impact someone at the ticket counter's life for just a moment, but how words that I use and phrases that I use can actually change someone's life. Do you see the difference there? The words that we use can actually be a curse or a blessing. I read a story this week about a woman named Shannon Schumann. And Shannon was spending time looking for this teacher that she had had back in grade school. And she was looking for her because this teacher had really made an impact in her life. And the impact wasn't through learning math or science, but there was something that the teacher had said to her at some point that really changed her life. She said that she was in a school and in a situation where the kids weren't necessarily very nice to her, this young woman. And she had a mother who struggled with mental illness and who didn't know how to take care of her. And this is specifically what she says, and I'm quoting her here. She says, "The children were bantering me. No one would sit by me. Tears filled my eyes and confusion filled my heart. To me, I wasn't any different than them. I didn't know that most children's mothers got up with them in the morning, and when they wet the bed, which I did nearly every night, their mothers would tell them to go shower. I hadn't realized that they had eaten breakfast at home and that they had brushed their teeth and they had brushed their hair." One day she was crying in school, and Mrs. Johnson, who was her teacher, came to her and said, "I'd like to speak to you in the hallway. Can we talk for just a moment?" And they went out in the hallway, and you would think that Mrs. Johnson might have used some flowery language or something, but she said to this young woman four words that would change her life forever. She said, "You smell really awful." Now, we all think that's harsh, but then she looked at her right afterwards, and she said, "It's hard to be around you, but I want to change that." She then started meeting with her every day in the nurse's office in the morning. And she brought her clean clothes to put on. She taught her about taking a shower before she came into school. She worked with the nurse to help her figure out how to do dental hygiene and to clean herself and take care of that. Shannon talks about how one of the greatest things in her life was walking in every morning to having clean clothes given to her. She said those four words absolutely changed her life. It put her on a trajectory where she was able to start taking care of herself. She ends the story with this. "Her teaching me all of that made me realize that I could make a difference and create a different life for my own children. I didn't realize the difference was parents in the homes. Having a grown-up love and care for you makes a difference in who you become." Those four words were not flowery words that she gave her, right? I think sometimes we think with our words, in order to bless someone, they must be sometimes false, or they must be things that people want to hear. But later in the story, she does reconnect with her teacher. And her teacher said four words that were as powerful as the first four. She looked at her and she held her and she looked into her eyes and she said, "I'm proud of you." See, she used her words to bless her life rather than to curse her. These are not words, friends, that were flowery or easy for her to hear. She used her words to change her life. Are there places in your life where you need to share something with someone that you love that could be used to change their life? Is there a word that someone needs to hear that is done in love and is said with love, but will actually be transformative to them? Here's the final point this morning. When we gossip, we hurt people. But the blessing is often in what we don't say. Hear that? When we gossip, we hurt people, but the blessing often comes in what we don't say. Let's look at verse 13 here. A gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy person keeps a secret. I think there are very few things in the human race that are more difficult and more challenging than gossip. It plagues almost every person across the board. And as I define gossip, gossip is when we say something about someone else that we wouldn't say in front of them, right? Or maybe when we tell a story that's their story to tell and isn't our story to tell, right? Has anybody here ever had a problem with gossip? Oh, see, those are the truthful people. The rest of y'all are like, maybe. All right, so it's something that plagues all of us that we deal with and we're challenged. I think gossip is one of the most hurtful things we can do to somebody. You know why? They can't defend themselves. They can't tell their own side of the story. All of a sudden, because of things that we're saying about them, when we get out into a new space or they step out into a new space, they don't understand why people around them are maybe not spending the same time with them that they once did, or are maybe frustrated with them and they have no clue why. And the church is one of those places where we do it, and we do it really well because we couch it under the conversation of prayer. God, please, Murph, please pray for Cindy. You know, she's been cheating on her husband. Or, guys, we're in a group, and we need to pray for Al. I saw him at the bar again last week. Let's pray for him. Right, we use that word in the church often in communities where we say, let's figure out how to talk about one another and couch it under God. Right, this is okay with God because I use the word prayer. Let's pray for this person. And we do that and we need to stop. It needs to end. Because there is in no way where that builds people up. Sam Chapman, he's a founder of this company called Empower Public Relations. It's in Chicago. And he used to work for a company where people did this backbiting and gossip all of the time. Right? Have you guys ever experienced that in the workplace where people do that and they talk about one another and the water cooler conversation, and people often use that as an opportunity to get ahead and push people down. And he said when he started his new company, there was going to be one main rule. If you're committed to gossip, and I'm quoting him here, you get fired. There are no options. When a new employee comes in, they sit down with them and they say, if you're a person who's going to gossip, let's go ahead and end this now. And if that's something you struggle with, we're going to help you work on it, but it's going to stop. Says some of the employees said, as they would get around the water cooler, the proverbial water cooler, it took a little work at first. But in the end, they worked for the best company that they were ever able to work for because they trusted one another. They weren't struggling any longer. They started having honest conversation and dealing with pain and things that were going on in their work community. And one of them said, if I must vent, if I still have some unresolved issues at the end of the day, and it's my favorite phrase, she said, I save the drama for my mama. I don't bring it into this place. Now, as I read more, what I realized that translated to was, she just didn't talk about it. So I think that's a great phrase for me that I'm going to use in my head over this next week. If I have any inkling to talk about people, I'm going to say over and over again, save the drama for your mama, right? My mom lives in Florida. If I'm going to call my mom to give her drama, I'm going to get some more back, right? If you're listening, Mom, I dearly love you. But I'm going to get some more drama back, right? So there's no point in letting all that gossip happen. It doesn't help anyone. Ultimately, as I said in the beginning, I believe this whole series has been about changing us. And I'll take that more personally. It's been about changing me. Things that I need to deal with in my own life. It's about my own transformation. Now, if the tongue is a great indicator of transformation in our lives, then we need to see how we're using it, to examine it. Am I saying things that build people up, or am I saying things that tear them down? Is there somebody that could come back to me one day and say, hey, that thing you said to me when I was 15 or 17, it changed my life, but not for the better? Are there people that I'm talking about and I'm gossiping about that isn't building them up or isn't encouraging them in any way, shape, or form? The passage in James goes on to talk about how we praise God with the same tongue that we use to tear other people down. And that's something we have to think about and wrestle with in our own lives. Can we go through a week without using our words to hurt someone? Maybe just take gossip this week. Maybe take that one little thing. Because someone else said to me this week, well, you know, if somebody can't go a week without alcohol, then they have an alcohol problem, right? So if we can't go a week without gossiping about people, we've got a gossip problem. We've got an issue that we need to wrestle with and deal with in our own lives. My prayer for us as this series ends is that we would be people who are seeking to be transformed. That we would work on changing us. The game of life is too difficult to do it without being transformed. It's too difficult to do it unchanged and alone without realizing that Christ can be there and walk through every bit of it with us. Let's move forward in life, ready to tackle these things, ready to be transformed and changed. We're going to have an opportunity this morning to come and receive communion. It is one of the most transformative things in the church for me when I get to come to the table and to be reminded of Christ's great love for me, and the reason that it all happened was so that we all might be changed, that we might have an opportunity beyond what we can do on our own. Amen.